Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Man, what a weekend in Tampa Bay sports. One of the greatest World Series games ever Saturday night as a local kid makes good as Seminoles' Brett Phillips becomes the hero. And they couldn't keep it going, though. They lost 4-2 to the Dodgers Sunday. Now trail the series 3-2. We'll talk about the resilient Rays. And Tom Brady throws 4 touchdown passes, rushes for another score. Yeah, but he needs more weapons. Get ready for Antonio Brown. We've got all that and so much more to talk about on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Hey, folks, go visit our friends at Old Northeast Jewelers. They've been in St. Pete for a long time, but now they also have a brand new store in Hyde Park. The address is 1607 West Swan Avenue in beautiful Hyde Park Village. Now, of course, when you go there, you got to check out the Grand Seiko. It's described as the pure essentials of watchmaking, elevated to the level of art. This is not your grandfather's Seiko. It's Grand Seiko. It's the ultimate in timekeeping, the ultimate in style, and the ultimate in collectability. Say Rick and Steve sent you, and they'll give you 1 extra year warranty on your purchase. That's Old Northeast Jewelers, of course, still on 4th Street, and now their new location at 1607 West Swan Avenue in beautiful Hyde Park Village. All right, Steve, I am still in Las Vegas, a city that
you haven't
never
left
sleeps.
Las Vegas yet?
I haven't. I'm Nicolas Cage. I went to the liquor mart and got a bunch of I got a shopping cart and filled it up with vodka. No, I don't drink vodka. Fill it up with bourbon. No, I don't. I didn't do that either.
You should.
But I'm leaving Las Vegas, but not until tomorrow. As we do this podcast, it is a very late Sunday or early Monday morning. I'm not even sure which. Man, I want to tell you, normally it would be enticing to go see, I don't know, Barry Manilow down the street, but instead, I sat home on Saturday night in my hotel room, did not leave, and was a good boy, and watched what arguably for me was one of the greatest World Series games I've ever seen. Now, not great in terms of like the overall, you know, excellence in play. I mean, there were errors, you know, especially the way the game ended. It was bizarre the way it ended. But the way these teams went back and forth, and the resiliency of the Rays, and just what a storyline that game had with Brett Phillips coming up. First of all, there hasn't been many games that have ended in walk-off fashion, to be honest with you, World Series games, let alone one with 2 outs.
So I believe technically Brett Phillips does not get credited for a walk-off hit.
He doesn't. Why is that?
Because there's 2 errors on the play.
Okay. All right. Well, so the last at
leave
bat,
it to baseball to ruin that, you know.
Yeah, right. Let's go ahead and water it down. We'll say the last at bat with 2 outs and 2 strikes. I don't know. I mean, literally, he was down to his last pitch. Now, this is a guy, by the way, who is my son's age. He grew up in the St. Pete area. Went to Seminole High School. Was at Tropicana Field, like me and my son, back in 2000 and what was it, 8, when they were in the World Series against the Phillies.
Yep.
So imagine, you know, all of us have kids. So many of us have kids that were part of that Rays World Series. They got to become Rays fans for that magical year that the Rays, you know, lost 100 and came back and made it to the World Series. And Brett Phillips was one of those kids. He's one of those guys. And here he was on the biggest stage. The 27th of, I think, 28 players they even had available. I think only Michael Perez did not play in that
game. Who was coming in if it went to extra innings because they had pinch hit for Zunino.
Right. And, I mean, you know, we can get into the back and forth, you know, the Kiermaier home run and, you know, of course, Brandon Lau with a 3-run jack to give him the lead and the way the Dodgers kept getting, oh, my God, the 2-out hits that this team gets. It's just incredible. Never seen anything like it. I think they've scored 50-something runs.
It's almost 60 outs. Now, if not over.
Is it 60? Okay. What? They just scored another one. And so, I mean, it was really a seesaw battle. It was.
Well, you had 8 straight half innings with a run scored.
Right. Right.
I mean, you know, it was just crazy. I don't know if it was the greatest World Series game ever, but it was probably the craziest one I've watched.
Craziest ending for sure. Like, well, one of the craziest finishes. And I'll say this. And I know there are people, and I don't know why, that don't necessarily like Joe Buck. I'm telling you, go back and listen to his call of that final play and tell me where there's even a comma that he missed.
Mm-hmm.
He is succinct. He is a spot on with these enthusiasm and the surprise, and of course, I mean, Rosarena doing the somersault halfway down the third baseline is going to be out by a mile.
Pulled a Danny Dimes, Daniel Jones.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Him and Daniel Jones, they tripped on the turf monster, and then you know the catcher thinking it's going to be a close play, so he goes for the sweep tag and misses the ball. It was just incredible, right down to, you know, Brett Phillips doing the airplane in the outfield. I mean, this whatever it was, 20-second clip, I've probably watched it 100 times. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm telling you, it gives you goosebumps every time you see it. And that, look, I'm a show for a great story. John Romano wrote one of the best columns I've ever read. A lot of good columns about this game, but I'm telling you, you got to read John Romano's. It's why we love baseball. It really is. Anything can happen in October. World Series heroes are born. And one of the things that Brett Phillips said that I will repeat to my kids, and everyone should remember, because I thought it was so well said. First of all, he was out of gas altogether. I think about an hour or two after the game, he was still trying to catch his breath. But one of the things he said was, he goes, you know, because he talked about being at the World Series in 08 and growing up in the St. Petersburg area and going to Seminole and all that. And he said, you know, you're just never that far away from your dreams. Dream big. That was the coolest thing, because there he's right. He's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. He was right in that moment and delivered. And I don't know what's going to happen. You know, they lose 4-2. We can get into that. And now they face elimination on Tuesday. But, you know, for one night, this team showed everything it's about. You know, the resiliency. They're not better than the Dodgers if you just hold them up 1-9. You know, they're just not. And even the pitching staff, I mean, you know,
their bullpen's better. Their bullpen's better.
Their bullpen is better, and that's the weakness of the Dodgers. You got to knock out their starters. They haven't been able to beat Kershaw yet. You know, and so they're going to have to find a way to beat Bueller at least once. But at the end of the day, it's like the sum of your parts, right? I mean, this team 1-28, whatever it is, is just one of the best baseball teams that certainly the Rays have ever had. And, you know, and it's just made for a very entertaining series. The pressure that I got to give credit to the Dodgers for bouncing back. And, of course, it's just mm-hmm. the old adage, right, that you're only as good as next day's starter, which is pretty damn good, as it turns out. But Dave Roberts, I thought he was going to lose his mind when he saw the way that game ended. I mean, I you know, they had that clip of him just holding his head, and I thought, easy there, Dave. Don't, you know, there's still more games to play. And that's the thing. It was, they tied the series 2-2. Of course, it could have been down 3-1, and this series would be over, in fact, because Clayton Kershaw was able to beat mm-hmm. them on Sunday night. But, man, it was just a terrific finish, and just a great story that you could not script. That's what we love about sports. You can't anticipate that a kid named Brett Phillips, right, on a day where Dan Johnson throws out the first pitch, remember that guy?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Involved in two of the greatest baseball moments ever in the race history. You have a Dan Johnson-like moment with Brett Phillips. It was terrific.
Well, and a few things to note on that play, and there's been so many people have broken down this play.
Sure.
For lots of reasons. I mean, Taylor's booting in the outfield.
Right.
But the two things that haven't been talked about a lot, I've seen a couple people discuss, is one, a Rosarena. So he... You know, he's flying around the bases. He trips, heading down third base.
Yes.
And then he sees the throw coming in, and he turns back to go to third. Mm-hmm. But he didn't turn and go to third. He was watching the play the whole time.
He didn't turn his back. That's a good point.
He kept his head really watching the ball. Point. When he realized the ball gets by, that allowed him. He didn't just turn and retreat.
Again.
Yeah.
You're right.
He kept his
head
in the play. And that's a rookie doing that.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean,
presence of mind to watch the ball.
Everything that kid's doing is so impressive. It's
well, and we didn't even mention the home run. I mean, he set a freaking mm-hmm. record for home runs in the playoffs.
And then on Sunday night, he set the record for hits in a postseason.
It's incredible. I mean, what it's history. I mean, there mm-hmm. were so many historical things, but a Rosarena, I mean, you know, I can't wait to see what he becomes. I don't think you can do this for one playoff and you know, this. I mean, there are World Series heroes born all the time. I mean, Brett Boone was never a great player, but he's Brett freaking Boone if you talk to the people, you know, in Boston.
You mean Aaron Boone?
Or Aaron Boone. Did I say Brett?
Yeah, Brett's, Boone, Brett did play in the majors and was a good player.
Yeah, he was a good player. Aaron bleeping Boone. I should know this. If I was a Boston fan, I would know this. But Aaron bleeping Boone, you know, had his moment, and there's been others, Jim Larritz and you know, the Bucky Dent. There's World Series and playoff heroes all the time in October. But for this, I mean, I want to just see – I want to know the rest of the story, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how great is this guy going to be?
It's,
I mean, how good is he going to be?
And he's done this postseason without a lineup around him hitting either for the most part.
No.
It's not like he's got a lot of protection there.
None. I mean, a little bit from Margot, but not really. They did. I thought Kevin Cash did a great thing in that game. He moved him to second in the order.
Mm-hmm.
And that turned out to be a big thing.
Yep.
A really big thing.
Mm-hmm. And moved Lau down a spot, although, but the other part of that play with Brett Phillips that I don't think gets talked about enough is everyone's talked about the Taylor error and Smith missing the ball.
Yep.
And Kenley Jansen, well, I don't know where he's standing.
He wasn't backing up anybody.
But Max Muncy's relay was awful.
He threw a changeup.
Well, he threw a change, but he's 60 feet away, and he's throwing it to the foul side of Smith.
Wrong side of the.
You got to be throwing it. You got to be throwing it so he can go
to the inside
runner.
Into the runner. Yeah,
yeah, right. And he threw a changeup, which was just awful.
Because that way he doesn't have to turn his back and try to sweep tag, thinking the guy was going to be there.
But quite frankly, I thought he deserved the error, not Kevin Smith. I mean, that was such a bad relay at 60 feet away. It wasn't like you're sitting there out beyond second trying to throw a relay.
A horrible relay, and it was responsible for him thinking that he had to blindly turn and sweep tag. However, if you see where the ball is, it's a very catchable ball.
It is.
But you can't account for the fact that Rosarena had done a somersault and was still, you know, 20 feet from home plate.
Right.
Otherwise, the guy didn't try to swipe tag him.
But
you know?
The other part of that was, and this is where Kenley Jansen, if he was backing up the play, Kevin Smith wouldn't have been so far out to begin with. So when Muncy turned, he's thrown to where he saw him, and Smith was trying to get back to the plate at that point.
Oh, they made so many mistakes. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, the amount of errors in that play the Dodgers made was incredible, considering they're a really good defensive team.
And it was just so nonchalant, too. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, a guy came from first on a base hit to center field. Are you kidding me? Like, what? How is that even an option? You know what I mean? Like, it's just a regular. It wasn't in the gap. It wasn't hit hard. I mean, you're coming in. You're charging. Everything's in front of you. Like, how does that happen?
Mm-hmm. And another reminder last night, as my wife and I are sitting there watching, I'm like, this game should have been at the Trop. That was a home game.
I know. Can you imagine?
How much fun would that have been? I mean, you know, obviously things don't jumping. Even the same, but I mean, that should have been a home game. And just thinking back to last postseason and the two games against the Astros, which were incredible at the Trop.
Oh, I was there at game four with my son and his girlfriend. And I've never, I mean, it was as loud or louder than the World Series back in 98. It was incredible. I just remember, you know, the great relay that throw that
Kiermaier to Adames to Darno.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the best. Again, one of the best plays I've seen in the postseason, and that building, that roof was shaking. It was going to come off. I mean, it was that loud, and I can't imagine. Literally, I can't imagine the noise and the fervor, and you know how many people might have fainted if they had been there alive. It's probably a good thing when you think about it that they weren't there, because there might have been some EMTs busy that night. I mean, that could have been harder. How to take city, baby? I thought Dick Vitale was going to lose it. He was on the internet. He couldn't believe his Rays. Yeah, it was incredible, man. It was really something. But, unfortunately, not so good Sunday night. And I didn't get to see much of this. I got to see the last inning, and that was about it. And I got the leadoff guy on. Come on, Austin Meadows, make some contact, big guy. You know, you got to get something out of him. And They couldn't do anything in the ninth inning.
They struggled a lot throughout the game. I mean, Adames just looked lost at the plate tonight.
Yeah, no, he came up in
some key situations. In the fourth inning, before the play you're going to talk about, he came up in the fourth with one out, runners in the corners, and just looked awful. I mean, just struck out, just kind of like he did late in the game, too.
He's having a bad series. I mean, bad playoffs altogether.
Yeah, at the play. I mean, unlike you know, last defensively, year, he's been pretty good.
He let up. Yeah, last year, though, his bat just woke up. He was a star.
Yep. He hasn't let it affect his defense. The one game he had a bad game. But beyond that, in the postseason, he's been good. But So in the fourth inning, the Rays are down 3-2 at this point. Glasnow, by the way, just the same
ball one,
same
ball
Glasnow,
two,
nibbling, just
3-1.
Yeah,
three,
he just didn't he didn't have it tonight. He was releasing the ball too early, too late. The pitches were all over the place.
He hasn't had it for a few nights in this World Series at all.
Yeah, it's. I don't know if part of it's going up against Kershaw, or though he's still a young pitcher, although he's 27, but young in terms of experience at the big leagues. Start to wonder if the pressure of the postseason, kind of the questions you get to Kershaw that he's gotten for years now. He's not as good as Kershaw at this point, and it's not as many times as Kershaw either, as far as in the postseason and not living up to what you think you're capable of or expected. But he struggled last year against the Astros. He struggled in this year in the postseason, and you start going, I don't know if it's just the pressure, if he's just doesn't have the pitches, and it's too early to sit there and say, hey, this guy can't pitch in the postseason or anything like that. I mean, he still held him in the game tonight. He was the first pitcher to go 5 innings. He was the first starter to go 5 innings for the Rays in this World Series.
I know.
He gave up 4 runs, but when he left, it was 4-2. They were in the game.
Yeah. Well, listen, you can't win every game 2-1 or 3-2. I mean, they had to score a whole bunch of runs the other night. But against Kershaw, and we've said this, they're going to have to beat Kershaw or Buehler one time at least. And, we'll see who the Dodgers throw against them Tuesday. But it's a good pitching staff over there. Mm-hmm. Now, where their weakness is, if you get to their bullpen, you've got to survive their starters, get to the bullpen, and then you got a chance. As opposed to the Rays, where if they have a lead, which is critical, and they get you into the sixth inning, the Rays are going to win almost 90-something percent of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and although Nick Anderson's a little rough late. What, six straight outings he's given up runs or something like that?
I remember it seems to me his velocity is down a little bit, but mostly he's elevated all his stuff. Like his fastball is elevated. He's getting too much of the plate. He was unhittable with that slider and that fastball, but he was locating it. You know what I mean? He would get strike one, strike two, and he challenged guys. But now it's kind of like center cut, balls up a little bit. Guys can see it much better. I don't know what it is. I don't know if he's tired. I don't know. It's a 60-game season, so I don't know. They didn't work as much as they would for 162. But they also, didn't have any days off. So you don't know if this is catching up to him, some of those guys in the bullpen. I don't know.
Go ahead.
Just go ahead. We didn't mention the one play.
Well, that's why I was going to get back to the fourth inning. So
yeah, right.
So after Adames strikes out, now you've got Kiermaier up, Renfro's at first, Margot's at third. Margot had already stolen second, advanced to third on a throwing error. I don't remember if they give it to the catcher or or Taylor. But the ball went in the outfield, so Margot gets to third. And the shift's on for Kiermaier, so everyone's kind of shifted to the right side. Third baseman's way off. And Margot gets a heck of a jump. I mean, crazy jump.
He did.
And he tries to steal home, which
I can't
tell you the last time in the world. I mean, I think they said, 91, 92, something was the last time of a
straight.
The last
guy I think I saw steal home, personally, was like B.J. Upton. He did it a couple times for the Rays.
Yeah. The last time in the World Series, I think, was 2002. It was a double steal.
Okay.
So it wasn't like a pure steal at home like Margot did. Yeah, the guy at first goes first. And then
he throws it back to home. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but Margot almost got it.
He did. It was close.
First of all, Clayton Kershaw, to step off and not get the balk in that situation.
Very good presence of mind.
And Margot almost got it, but a lot of people had issues with that play. And
well, if it works,
the jump he got, I think he did that on his own because Renfro didn't go at all.
I mean, it was going to be close. Yeah. It's bang, bang. You don't want to make it out there, though. Let's be honest. That is not how you want to go down. But
you don't. But you had already had first and third with nobody out, and you had a pop up and a strikeout.
And they're not hitting with men in scoring position. Mm-hmm. So I get it. Yeah, mm-hmm. I totally get it.
And at that point, that would have tied the game.
Right. And if he's called safe, they don't overturn that either. I mean, it was that close.
Yep.
Like, you didn't have enough evidence one way or the other. So since they called him out, you couldn't call him safe. And if they called him safe, I'm not sure you could call him out. So that was unusual, to say the least. You don't see many attempted steals at home.
I mean, I know a lot of people had issues with it, but with the jump he got, with the only thing that was disappointing was that it wasn't a right-handed batter in the box. I think it would have made it harder for Austin Barnes to see that. And you were commenting on, I mean, Kiermaier.
Listen, I watched the replay because I obviously was doing the Raiders game, but I watched the replay and I'm thinking, why is Kevin Kiermaier jumping out of the box to give the catcher a free shot? Like, you have every right to stand in there, whether he steps off the mound or not. I mean, just because he's not going to throw you a pitch, stand right there. You have every right to it. And in that way, you know, maybe it's not as easy to, because the ball was thrown way inside. It might have hit Kiermaier for starters. But at least would have been something where he might have had to reach behind him to catch it and then been blocked off, you know, from the tag in a sense. I just don't know why he literally stepped out as if, here, throw the pitch out now. I think get out of the way.
It caught him by as much surprise as it did everybody else, I think. So.
I'm sure it did. And that's why maybe they need a sign or a signal, you know, like something. Like, here he comes. I don't know. It was a gutsy play. Didn't work out, unfortunately. But look, if the Rays were going to win this series, it wasn't going to be in four games, right? It wasn't going to be in five. They were going to need six or seven, and now they need seven. And I'll tell you what, if they can get to seven with Charlie freaking Morton on the mound, and he didn't pitch that great in his last outing, but game sevens, the game seven Charlie Morton, you're very happy with.
Mm-hmm.
You'd feel really good. They did that in the other series, obviously, and they won it. So, you know, why not the World Series?
If you're the Rays, you didn't use your A bullpen on Sunday. You got the off day Monday, so your A bullpen has had 2 days off.
Good shape.
You know, so you and I were talking beforehand. If Kershaw and Buehler are pitching four times, you got to beat them once, and then you got to win the other games.
Yeah, you do.
So far, they've won the two other games that those guys haven't started.
Yep.
I don't think Buehler's going to start game six. I think they're going to hold him to game seven, and as we're taping they haven't announced anything.
But they may get another bullpen day, which they're very capable of beating up those guys.
So, you know, you hope Blake Snell has a good outing for game six. And then if you can get to game seven with Charlie Morton, you take your chances.
Yeah. No, look, I don't think the Dodgers are – after what happened Saturday night, they're not counting chickens, man.
Well, I mean, when the JV team pulls that on you.
Yeah, okay, Bill Plaschke.
When the puny Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah, that's the psych job. He's setting them up. He's setting up the Dodgers and Dave Roberts right there. If I'm Dave Roberts, I'm like, really? You want me? You just want to have my job? Is that it? You're going to set me up. And no way they can lose these guys. Well, they can lose to them. So, great World Series. But, man, Phillips, that story is incredible.
Is that the greatest play in Rays history?
Here's the problem.
You got the Dan Johnson home runs, you got the Evan home, but this is in the World Series, and this is the World Series.
Somebody was asking me, is it the greatest play in sports history? Because you'd have to think of Rondé Barber in the interception against Philadelphia to steal that in the NFC Championship. You'd have to think about Marty St. Louis in Game Six in Edmonton, or Calgary. I'm sorry, in the Stanley Cup Finals to take it to Game Seven and then win there.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two. To me, those are the two iconic plays that got you to a world championship or in a world championship. This one, the problem is the context. Like, you know, they haven't won the World Series. It wasn't like the final game, you know? And so
if they come back to win it, it might be, because to go down 3-1 to this team, you don't expect to beat the Dodgers three games in a row.
Right. Right. But does David Price closing out, you know, the ALCS in 2000, is that a bigger moment, right? Aki stepping on second and the whole thing. The thing about Evan's home run is simply that it got him into the playoffs, even though, while dramatic, I think the Yankees didn't need to win.
No, they didn't. They had already clinched everything. Although they were up 7-0 in that game.
They were up 7-0, and they gave up the lead and everything, but they wasn't like they were throwing their A bullpen at them, you know what I mean? Like, they were kind of like playing for another day. And I don't know. It got him into the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't. You know, so, again, great day in baseball. Great, dramatic home run for sure. And it was the greatest single day that Evan Longoria ever had as a Ray, because I think he hit two home runs that day. But, you know, and this one lacks context, because if the Rays win the World Series.
Then it absolutely is.
No question it is. No question. But because they could still lose and lose 4-2, it was a great moment. I don't know if it's the best, the mm-hmm. biggest Rays moment. I would still say getting to the World Series the way they did, maybe David Price coming in, Akiyama Mara.
Well, this playoff too, you got to think of the Brasso home run against Chapman as well.
The Brasso home run is that's up there too, and maybe that's bigger than this moment because that got them to the World Series.
I got them to the ALCS
Price.
Over the Yankees.
Oh, that's right, got them to the ALCS. There you go. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, yeah. I don't know. I think World Series tops playoffs, but.
Yeah, but yeah, we don't know the context of this yet because we don't know how this wraps up.
Yeah, we're waiting. Also, if they win it, it's the moment. That's the moment.
Because if they go down 3-1, you probably aren't winning that series.
Oh, you're not going to win, no. You would have lost. 3-1
with Kershaw and Bueller still to go.
You lose on Sunday night.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So that was cool. I love baseball, man. Greatest game ever. I know I cover football, but I was a baseball guy my whole life. Sorry, I'm not going to apologize. Sorry, not sorry. But, I get it. Baseball right now is how hard can I throw, how far can I hit it, how hard can I swing. There's not a lot of balls in play. There's strikeouts and home runs. And it's for those of the fans that don't know sort of all the silent game that goes on between pitches, there's not a lot of action. It's slow. I get it. I get all of that. But I'm telling you, there's something about baseball, man, that, you know, everyone gets 27 outs, you know, and it can go forever. Mm-hmm. And there's no clock. And anything can happen. And sometimes it does. And you just don't get that in the other sports with a clock. You know, eventually mm-hmm. they run out of time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the great thing. Like, you can never count a team out until the 27th out. And so I just love it. And in October in Major League Baseball is just special. It just is. Like I say, you get these heroes and, you know, dreams come true. So remember that, kids. Whatever your dream is, as Brett Phillips would tell you, never that far away from it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, speaking of dreaming, the Bucks are 5-2. How's that sound? Hasn't happened much.
No.
They're 5-2.
And dominating.
And dominate. And look like, I'm telling you, they look like one of the best teams in the NFC. They look like they could go to a Super Bowl. Oh, and they're getting better on offense. Much better. And the big reason is that, you know, three of those guys were able to be on the field together, and that hasn't happened in a while. They're not all healthy. I mean, Mike Evans is still beat up. There's no doubt about that. I mean, the guy's had, you know, three catches in the last two games.
He's not even getting targeted much.
He's not getting targeted. He wasn't targeted until the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's Brady, right? I mean, listen, Tom Brady is going to throw the ball where the defense tells him to throw the ball mm-hmm. almost every time. He's not going to force anything. And that's why, by the way, how's this for the last five games? You ready? 15 touchdowns, one interception.
Is that good?
The last five games. Holy. I don't think you can find a. One time Brad Johnson in the Super Bowl year, because I wrote about it, and John, you know, that was it's when I realized that Gruden only liked you when they were doing well and you were writing good stories. And I asked them about. Because I think at that time, like, Brad had thrown 15 touchdowns and four interceptions at the time I wrote a story about it. And then I asked him about it, and he goes, yeah, I saw your story. I like your stuff. No, you don't. But anyway, that was the other good period of Buccaneer football that I remember. But I think that this is probably as good as it's ever gotten. But, yeah, 15 touchdowns and one interception. I mean, he's going to throw a lot of touchdowns. He's going to break Jameis Winston's record, I think, at least the touchdown part of it, not the interception part. He's getting better. And when those guys are healthy, it's really impressive what they can do. The other thing is, two games in a row, he wasn't sacked. Two games in a row, they didn't have a turnover. When this team doesn't turn the ball over and they don't allow Brady to get hit like he was in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
you can't. They're a tough out. I mean, the Raiders beat the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, their defense is challenged, but they beat the Chiefs. And, you know, this game, I thought John Gruden called a good game in the first half. He was running the football. He was really testing them. But at the end of the day, you know, that defense finally started playing a little bit, and Brady was just too much. They didn't, you know, when he can sit there and hold the ball and find those guys, he found everybody, right? He got Gronk involved. First play of the game, he missed Gronk. Gronk could have had 100 yards.
Yep.
But he had another touchdown. That's 2 and 2 games. Getting down the field with those, you know, over routes, those deep over routes. You know, the throw to Scotty Miller. The game really, that throw in the corner of the end zone.
Oh.
That was incredible. The game really changed on that play because that 2 minute drive was 88 yards. And they picked up a bunch of third downs and a fourth down because Brady was just that on top of it. And, you know, for them at that point to go up like that, it kind of put the Raiders, I want to say Oakland, put the Raiders on their heels. And they battled back, though. I mean, it was 24-20. This game was 24-20. And then Brady got it going again. And then they get the interception from Antoine Winfield. They score again. So, I mean, they were able to close it, and that's what the defense hasn't done. I thought it was, Leonard Fournette had a big play on that drive mm-hmm. when it's 24-20. You know, the pass over the middle, and he you know, it's 3rd and 13. He goes north and south and gets 13 yards, keeps it going. I thought that was huge. One of the biggest plays in the game, probably. And then the defense. Again, they had some trouble with Nelson Aguilar from Berkeley Prep, and he got off pretty good there, had over 105 yards, I think he had, and got the early touchdown with Levante David sort of playing him man-to-man. They changed that coverage, and it worked better. And although Aguilar had a good game, you know, he wasn't that. And so I just, you know, the defense was just really good. And
I thought the Devin White play on the fourth down on Carr.
Devastating.
Came out of nowhere and just, you know, leveled them and stopped them. I thought that was huge, too.
By the way, 3 sacks for Devin White this mm-hmm. in this game. 3. He's got 4 on the season. He told us his goal was 5, and he wanted 5 interceptions. I don't know about the interceptions. This guy could end up with 10 or 12 sacks this year. I mean, he's that good. And he's only doing it from inside. He's only doing it when he bum rushes the A-gap.
Mm-hmm.
But he's so quick and so strong that hit on the sideline. You could hear – now, there wasn't any crowd in the stadium, okay, and I don't know what they played on TV, but when that happened on the Raiders bench, when he wiped them out and it was clean, you could just hear this, oh, like everybody was, woo, and then, of course, the Bucks were over there. You know, they were crowing pretty hard, but he brought it, man. He's a good player. Look, Levante David won NFC Defensive Player of the Month in September. I mean, you could make an argument that Devin White's going to win in October. And they're going to be fighting each other for Defensive Player of the Year if the Bucs go on and have the number one defense or make it, you know, deep in the playoffs and that sort of thing. Those two guys are going to be battling each other, and both of them, I think, should go to the Pro Bowl. Todd Bowles, that is the strength of their defense. And, you know, I was overwhelmed by how they played. I thought after the first drive or so, they really buckled down and they played well. So here they are, 5-2. Going to New York to play a Monday Night Football game against a Giants team that's not very good, to say the least. And then it's home against, their rival, the New Orleans Saints, for Sunday Night Football. And guess what the story will be all week? Antonio Brown. That's mm-hmm. going to be the story. Mm-hmm. Antonio Brown. And while we were away on Friday, I thought I was going to, you know, have a nice evening, make a drink. Kind of take it easy and along.
Watch
about
the Wisconsin game Friday night.
Yeah, right. And their quarterback, by the way, Wisconsin's quarterback, the 5-star
like Graham
kid.
Mertz, is that his name?
He hit like this first 20 or something like that. Yeah, Mertz. He was incredible. Threw 4 touchdown passes. Anyway, so my wife's going nuts and she's yelling, you know, go Wisconsin, Wisconsin, and I'm in there going, are you kidding me? They did it. They really did it. They signed. They're going to sign Antonio Brown to a 1-year deal. A guy that hasn't played football. He's played 1 game, by the way, in about 700 days. And that was the game that, you know, that he played for the New England Patriots. And then a bunch of assault charges came towards him. And before you know it, the Patriots ate $9 million. I mean, think of what teams have eaten to get rid of him. It's incredible. His last 3 teams have all had to get rid of him. And the Patriots, I think, wound up, you know, eating a bunch of money too, like $20 million. Then he goes to Oakland and, you know, they void out a bunch of money, but they give up two draft picks that they'll never get back. And then after that, he plays one game with the Raiders, or with the Patriots rather, and they had to guarantee him $9 million that they paid him. I mean, it's incredible how much this guy made to do nothing. But it just, I don't know. I would worry. As a head coach, I would worry. I know here's the larger question. Here's the larger reason why they're doing it, because I talked to BA about this, and he said it again tonight on Sunday night. And here's what it's about. It's that when they went to Chicago, Mike Evans had to try to run before the game to see if he could play. That's the second time this year. They did the same thing in New Orleans. And you know what? He did play, but he didn't play worth a damn. He wasn't any good. And it's because he's nicked up. He's hurt. He's got a bad ankle. Whatever. Right? So, I mean, that's a big part of it. Then you had Chris Godwin missing three games. You've had Scotty Miller with a groin injury and hamstrings. Mm-hmm. You got guys that are down.
And you got O.J. Howard who's out. Not the same position, but it's another pass catcher that's out for the
season. But it's a big
weapon,
yeah. And so here's a guy just sitting on his tuchus, and Brady has tried to get him since March. And sure enough, they're going to bring him in, give him a physical. They think they can handle him. Good luck with that, Byron Leftwich. Good luck with that, Larry Foote, and every other, you know, guy that played for the Steelers that thinks he knows him. I thought it was funny that Bruce was ruling him to give him a second chance. I'm thinking like one, two, three, four. Now it's like the fifth chance. maybe the first one for you. But in a COVID era, if he's not disciplined and all that, I mean, there is trouble in River City potentially. But, you know, hopefully that won't be the case. All right. So this is, of course, the City of Champions. And it's not limited to just the Rays and the Tampa Bay Lightning, which, by the way, Steve Stamkos, really funny on Twitter. Big Rays fan. Huge mm-hmm. Rays fan. Man.
Oh, he had a nice tweet about the Bucks today, too, on their win. So
speaking of moments, there's a guy that had a moment, right?
Yes. And actually, we found out now that, and I don't know if we've discussed this on the podcast, but he actually tore his groin on that goal, in that play.
That's incredible to me.
Yeah, it happened before he went by Lindell. He felt it tear, but still went on and scored the goal, and then he said it was kind of numb after that. I think I jumped into Pat Maroon's arms, but I don't, you know.
Yeah, well, that's why he didn't come back and play, so that explains that.
Well, yeah,
sure.
I mean, he had, you know, two more shifts, so it wasn't one of those where, you know, they thought he was just going to be a couple shifts. Is, you know, he got hurt on that third shift, the one he scored the goal on, so.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible play, really.
Yeah, it really was. So, speaking of the champions, the Tampa Bay Rowdies are trying to win one as well.
They're in the USL Championship. They knocked off Louisville on Saturday night 2-1. Louisville had like a 13-game unbeaten streak coming in. I don't think they trailed in that whole 13 games. And the Rowdies scored in the fourth minute early, had a 2-0 lead at halftime. And then, actually, the Rowdies scored all three goals in the game because it was an own goal they gave up in the second half. But they win 2-1. They're going to take on Phoenix Sunday night here in Tampa Bay at Al Lang Stadium.
That's awesome. Good for them. Again, it's just contagious. And, man, you know, the Rays still have work to do. They got to try to get it to a game seven. But it's been an incredible ride. The Bucks look like a team. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with Antonio Brown, but they look like a team that could go deep.
Yep.
You know, they got to go to New York. Then they got to play New Orleans. So.
Champion was crowned in Tampa Bay this weekend, too, as the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg was run Sunday. Joseph Newgarden won the race, but Scott Dixon claimed his sixth IndyCar championship. So
dominant.
He's one of the greatest racers ever, to be honest.
Any guy on four wheels, man.
Yep.
Just burning them up.
So it was kind of unique, as Matt Baker told us last week, about how they wrapped up the season. Normally that race is the first one of the season in March. So, but it was obviously canceled during the COVID shutdown.
And the Big Ten got started. Your Michigan Wolverines took out PJ Fleck's Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Yeah, they looked really good. Yeah, they're good. Yeah, Joe Milton played well at quarterback for them. So it's actually, it's the sixth season for Jim Harbaugh. It's the first quarterback he's had start a season that he recruited.
Yeah.
And most of them have been transfers and stuff.
From on the east side of Florida, right?
Yep, Pahokee, Florida, yep.
You know, over in Pahokee. So. Yep.
And if you saw the Indiana-Penn State game, that was a crazy game.
Oh, my goodness.
And Penn State shouldn't have scored a touchdown. Indiana let them score.
And the kids.
And that way they get a ball back down eight, and they go down the field and end up winning the game. knocked off Penn State. I liked the Indiana coach, Tom Allen.
Right.
In overtime, Penn State already scored the touchdown, kicks the extra point. They score the touchdown, and they go for two.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we've been close for years now. We keep getting close. I'm tired of being close. I want to win it.
Good for him.
And he went and for the two, it. And it was a very barely. Close, controversial.
Oh, barely, play. Yeah.
But, you know, he said, you know, it was the first time in 42 attempts to knock off a top 10 team.
And I would always do it because, look, I mean, if you know, it's the old, if I told you you could gain 2 yards and beat a rival you haven't beaten 42 years, would you do it? Yeah, then go for it, you know?
Well, and as he said, look, we're facing a top 10 team. We have a chance to put them away here. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I like the call. Although, I think Todd Gurley should have been watching that game.
Yeah.
Because for Atlanta today, the Lions let him go through the line. He gets to the end zone and realizes, wait a minute, I shouldn't.
Tragic.
But he fell in, and the Lions go down and win the game.
Raheem Morris loses. His race to 11 is over. Now it's a race to 10.
Yeah. Todd Gurley should watch some more college football. I think it would have helped him today.
Yeah. He didn't play so well.
Yeah. And if you're the Cowboys, you're looking for another quarterback.
Oh, goodness. You might be looking for a coach.
Maybe. I mean, Andy Dalton, that was a pretty wicked hit. He's got a concussion for sure.
Yeah. Remember when he signed, everybody's like, oh, Andy Dalton, that's the best quarterback. That's the best backup in the league right there. Just hasn't worked out. Nothing's worked out for Dallas.
And then
I really believe.
Yeah. And if you're DK Metcalf, how fast are you?
You sent me that clip. I couldn't believe. First of all, I think he ran like 80 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, it's like the dudes are standing still. That guy is big and fast.
Well, and he chased down Baker, who's fast too. I mean, Baker, I think they said
really?
Ran a 4.
He runs a 4.45.
Yeah, he ran a 4.45 at the combine. When you know.
And what does he run scared? 4.35? I mean, think about it. You know, they're not. That's the thing. They don't put like a bear behind you at the combine and chase you across the 40. I mean, it's like, you know, if you're trying to score, if you're trying to do things, you're going to run even faster. But yeah, there were some cool things. Great weekend in sports. Yeah,
but it worked out for the Cardinals, though. They knock off the Seahawks, which can help the Bucs. Although, I mean, the Cardinals are now 5-2, but it gives the Seahawks their first loss. So
hey,
every team in the NFC now has a loss. Yeah, every team in the NFC has a loss. So
right. Remember, there's home field. So you definitely want to have the best record in the NFC, not just in your division, but you got to start there. And they're on a collision course with New Orleans. I'm telling you. We'll see what happens. Hey, remember to go see our folks at Old Northeast Jewelers on 4th Street. Of course, they've been in that St. Pete location for a while. But now they have a brand new store, and you got to check it out. It's at 1607 West Swan Avenue in Hyde Park Village. My wife loves that place, by the way. She'd spend all day down there. And they got the beautiful Grand Seiko, of course. Make sure you check that out.
Tell her to pick you up one. Tell her to pick you up a Grand Seiko.
Well, you know, I'm hinting a lot, heavily. I told her to tell him Rick Stroud sent you. And she goes, well, you always send me. And I go, well, yeah, but this is different. By the way, before we go, I just want you to know that I'm in a hotel at the Renaissance in Las Vegas, which is not, I mean, it's, you know, all the hotels are nice, but I'm not at the Bellagio, okay? It's a Renaissance. It's a good hotel. But I had a first, and I've been traveling for a while. So I ordered room service. Of course, it's the COVID era, so, I mean, allow for some of this, right? Like, there's things that are not in your room, and there's not maid service and things like that until you check out all that. Okay, whatever. I ordered room service. It didn't come for 2 hours, and then the manager called me and said, I'm going to comp it. And I was like, all right, I don't care. I'm on expense, whatever. So he comped it. And then I get a phone call. I'm thinking, geez, what is it? Because you guys, 2 hours have gone by, and now you said you've done it, and I still don't have my food. And it was something outdoors that said your food is being delivered. It's outside your door, like a recording. I'm thinking, well, that's odd. And I go out there, and a robot, I kid you not, a robot brought me my room service. Like a robot, like R2-D2. Like the food was in this container. You open it up, and you pull it out, and pull the bag out. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. Like, this is so weird. It was kind of cool, but at the same time, a little creepy. And I had money in my hand, but I'm like, I ain't going to tip no robot. Like, first of all, there's no place to put the money necessarily. But
you need like a can of oil or something?
Yeah, like what does a robot need? Like, hey, watch out for those zombies. Like, what are you going to say? Like, I felt like Will, you know, it's like Will Smith or something. But anyway, yeah, AI, they got the order right. So I don't know if the robot had anything to do with that. And he just motored himself back down the elevator. I don't know how you can push buttons, by the way. You got to push buttons in the elevator to get down. I didn't see any arms. I don't think he had any arms. That was a first for me. Anyway, hope you guys enjoy the podcast. We're going to talk to Bruce Arians, of course, later today. Get the latest on if anybody got nicked up or banged up or just how excited he is to go play the New York Giants next Monday night. Tampa Bay fans, go crazy. You've got a baseball team trying to win a World Series on Tuesday, Game 6. You've got, of course, the Stanley Cup champions are watching this and having fun with it. And then the Bucks, are 5-2. So that's not a bad thing to be. Maybe. I don't want to say it. Maybe you can have nice things. I don't know. Anyway, thanks for listening. Again, for Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.